One of the things that enables us here at Will Radio to provide the marrow to you for free is advertisements. And I would not advertise something or sign up to promote it if I didn't actually believe in it. And so I want to tell you about HelloFresh. Last night, Kristen and I, we got home from work. I had finished writing. She was done with her workday. And we really wanted to eat something good, but we knew we didn't have a lot of time. So fortunately for us, a box of HelloFresh food had been delivered right to our door. We cooked it up in 35 minutes. We had salmon, basil pesto, and baby potatoes. It was absolutely amazing. For me, I really don't like going to the grocery store, which is one of the things I love about HelloFresh, because each meal kit is delivered right to my front door, and it all comes in a specially insulated box. It's simple, it's convenient. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code MARROW when you subscribe.
The following is an at-will presentation.
Welcome to The Marrow, conversations with creatives about who they are and why they make what they make. I'm your host, Josh Reebok. Today I'm speaking with architect, designer, and builder Chris Kofitsis. Chris Kofitsis, designer, architect, builder, you are with New World Design Builders, and oh my gosh, it is such an honor to have you on The Marrow. I am such a fan of your work. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
In fact, when I told my wife that I was going to get to sit down with you today, she was like, well, tell me some of the things he's done. And I named multiple of the projects that you've had your imagination and skill in, and she was immediately envious, and she wanted me to tell you that her and her mom visited multiple of your locations here in New York City.
And she wants a reservation.
Yeah, and she's like, get him to hook us up. And then she said, Josh, get him to come and hang the bath rack that you have neglected for the last two or
three
years.
I can do it.
How did you get started in this incredible world that you're in?
Well, I went to school, you know, for architecture, but before that, my dad was a builder, so
okay.
I've always learned to do things with my hands.
Okay.
Always. From as long as I could remember, I've always loved tinkering and working with things with my hands, and that led to doing drawings when I was young. I used to love doodling. And my dad passed away when I was about 16 years old, and he always wanted me to be an architect. And at the time, I didn't quite know what I wanted to be, but he always had pushed me when I was younger, like, you know, you can draw, you have the mind, you can put stuff together, be an architect. But something happened just after my dad passed away that I'll never forget. You know, I was in college at the time, and architecture wasn't on my spectrum. You know, I wasn't looking to be an architect or do anything in that field. And when my dad passed away, after all the years of him telling me you should be an architect, something echoed in my mind. And because my dad passed away so abruptly, I was given the opportunity to take any classes I want that semester. I basically had a semester off. So I was free to explore. So I took an architecture class. And it was just an introductory class. And when I tell you, Josh, I immediately fell in love with... I never knew I had creativity in me other than being able to draw.
Yeah.
You know, I was always being able to draw, and I was always expressing myself up until today. I was always expressing myself through a pencil or a pen. You know, when I'm in the office and I need to get an idea out, I immediately go to paper and pen. You know, it's just it's an old habit. So when I went into architecture school, I fell in love with the design, and the possibilities were endless. It dawned on me that there was not one right way to do things, you know? I mean, there's a lot of ways to tackle a problem.
Yeah.
And that process fascinated me. And furthermore, what reinforced it for me was seeing what I was coming up with, and then seeing my colleagues and the students that I was surrounded with, seeing what they were coming up with. Like, their ideas inspired me also, you know? So it was that's kind of how it all started for me. It just kind of happened like that.
Do you remember, you mentioned in your childhood and even up until now, you kind of having almost this innate ability or innate attraction to doing things with your hands. Do you remember the first thing you ever built?
Yeah, I remember building a car out of plywood, scraps of plywood. So when I was young, my dad would bring me to work. All right, that's what we did back then. In summer break, I think I was probably 6 or 7 years old. I wouldn't technically work, but I just kind of hang around the van all day. Well, he was a contractor, so he'd be working, and he always, you know, would bring me. And to keep me occupied, he'd give me tools, and I just start building things. And I remember I found these like old, this old beat up car, but it was just completely trashed. And I salvaged the wheels, and I just kind of made my own car out of it. And then pushing it, I remember like being a kid and pushing it down the driveway. I was like, I made that.
Yeah, right.
It was a great feeling.
So you were like 6 or 7 years old.
Something like that. I don't remember. It was like 6 or 7, something like that. I remember tinkering, you know, always like making something. Yeah. I always had to be creating something.
See, and I certainly when I was 6 or 7, but now at 37, I can't build. I mean, oh my gosh, it's so embarrassing. My lack of proficiency. So my wife and I had been married for maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years, something like that. And we didn't have a towel rack in the bathroom. And her father, my father-in-law, who's an amazing man, he bought for her that Christmas a drill and tool. So my wife was given the tools, not me.
No kidding.
And so she said this one day, she's like, will you please finally, for the love of all that is good and holy, will you please put up this you know, towel rack? And so I was like, yeah, no problem. And I say no problem, but inside I already kind of know where this is going. And so I go in the bathroom. I'm in there for, you know, 30, 45 minutes, and it's just, you know, complete mayhem. I mean, there's so many holes. I mean, at this point, it looks like someone has just taken a Tommy gun to the wall. And after maybe 30 minutes or whatever it is, there's this very, very, I mean, my wife is incredibly kind. And there's this very, very tender, sympathetic knock on the door. And she says, is everything okay? And so, I mean, just with my chin and my pride just hanging, I open the door and the rack, I mean, this would have worked better as a slide than a wrapper towels. And she comes in and she like pats me on the back. She's like, it's okay, it's okay. And so she takes the drill and, you know, she did it in 2 minutes.
So that's awesome. That's sexy. Yeah, that's right. Sexy. Oh, women in power tools. That's awesome.
But she did it in 2 minutes. But so I admire the fact that not only you're able to do it now, but that you were so drawn to it as a kid. But I want to come back to something you said, and this is so interesting to me. I mean, it sounds like, and so many of the guests we have on this show, you know, they have varied experiences in terms of their parents' role in kind of inspiring them towards what would become their craft. But it sounds like your dad, I mean, you've mentioned him multiple times. It sounds like he was really a profound influence on your life.
Oh, without question. You know, he wasn't around for me for my childhood all that long. He passed away when I was about 16.
Yeah.
But he made an impact on me. You know, he was good. He was taught me right from wrong. My dad was I always remember one thing about my dad. He has huge hands, and he always used to tell me he can fix anything. And he could. I mean, anything in the house, anything. He can always. I always admired my dad for that. You know, and I was like, wow, I wish one day I can, you know, have that.
Yeah.
Something imbued, you know, in me when he passed, and I loved the creative part of design. I love being an architect because it allows me to be in the construction field and build something, but create it. You know, there's nothing there's nothing better for me. You know, when I start working on a project, I fantasize. You know, I fantasize about how people will use the space that I've created, how people will create memories in spaces how people feel. It's a very powerful thing when you think of it that way. So it really inspires me to get behind my work and it really pushes my pencil, you know, so to speak, to create something and get inspired. And then I'll give it to the people who work for me, you know, who are unbelievably talented. I have a group of girls that are just really amazing. And they kind of put it into computer and bring it all into computer reality, you know?
Right.
And then from there, it goes on to the drawings, and then from there, it gets built. So it's pretty cool to walk through my art.
Oh my gosh. Well, and you're I mean, this is the writer in me talking.
Yeah.
When I've been in, you know, your spaces, which by the way, I mean, it includes residential, spas, restaurants, right. retail. I mean, really kind of spans the entire spectrum. I mean, if we were equating this to the writing world, it's like you, in your own way, write poetry, novels, yeah. fiction, nonfiction, stories, editor. I mean, it's all right. over the place, which is amazing. But
it's all connected, isn't it?
Absolutely,
it's all connected.
And I feel such I would describe it as a narrative feel to your spaces. And what I mean by that is there's such a sharp sense of place. Mm-hmm. There's such characterization. There's momentum and fluidity. It's like you feel in this really remarkable way, like this sense of like rising and releasing tension in rooms.
Yeah.
In one place in particular here, I think it's here in New York, that I've not been into physically, is called, I think it's called Flash Factory.
Yeah.
Please tell me about that space, because to me, oh my, I mean, it's amazing.
Please, yeah, it's a pretty cool venue. So Mike Satsky, who's the owner, have had this vision to go and find pieces and parts of church ornament. Hmm. And we scoured different avenues to get all types of church-inspired elements and kind of bring them all together into one space. Mm-hmm. And when you look, there's like, you would think that there's no rhyme or reason, but to the people who go to that establishment, mm-hmm. music is their church. Yep. So in a loose way, we're,
sure.
you know,
absolutely.
We've taken that sort of concept and ran with it and just created something that existed somewhere else, and
yeah.
now it lies within
yeah.
the space that we get to create music.
Yeah.
You know? And that was a fun project. It was
it's hypnotic. I mean, it's
yeah.
there's a wall of 19th century convent
right.
doors.
Right.
Then there are these I mean, the whole thing feels like this kind of hallucinatory cathedral.
Yeah.
In this amazing
yeah.
way, where there's like these alcoves with pews and the balustrades, and then behind the bar, it's like all stained glass. And then one of the images of like is of this bearded, scowling, dark kind of Procrustean monk right behind the bottles of like, you know,
yeah.
Jim Beam
and
whatever else. It's really remarkable. But I say all that to lead me to the question, because again, tying it into the way I view the world, which is a narrative, when you're beginning a project, I mean, I look at your work and I think, where in the world do you begin? Like, what's kind of the origin point that then springs you forward mm. through this really incredible thing? Like, how does a project typically start for you?
Well, the inspiration for me, first and foremost, starts with my client. So I get so what I like to do is I like to really get to know who I'm designing for. Mm. And the more I get to know that person, probably the more I start to like them,
mm.
and the more then I start to like the project.
Mm.
I get inspired by what inspires people, and I get to manifest that in different ways and create art in a three-dimensional space.
Yeah.
So it starts for me primarily what the person that I'm working with together wants and what their end goals are.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to take it and put it together in a way where it otherwise wouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Mike, for instance, I'm just going to give you, Mike had a vision
yeah.
of what the space would be, or any of my clients have a vision of what the space is going to be. And it's my job to make sure that it flows mm-hmm. properly, it works properly. But first, you know, the most important thing for me is aesthetics, and it gets the point across of what they're trying to convey. Because everybody
mm-hmm.
walks around
yeah.
with an idea, you
right.
know. It's my job to put that idea in three-dimensional reality.
Yeah, right.
And through training and experience and a lot of years, I've been able to sort of really harness that and be able to make it happen for most of my clients. And you know, I end up being best friends with these people. And that, to me, is a good barometer for success, you know, and I've done a good job.
Yeah, right.
You know, if I'm friends with the person that I've just done a year, 2 year, 3 year project with, mm-hmm. and we're still friends at the end, because as you know, mm-hmm. business is difficult, man. It's mm-hmm. like things get in the way. There's hurdles thrown at you mm-hmm. left and right. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to create art, but there's all these other things. There's people's safety. There's a lot of things rolled up into architecture. But first and foremost, I would say the creative process starts with getting inspired with my clients and really bringing their dreams and visions into fruition.
Well, and I love that. I mean, I resonate so much with the idea of you being inspired by the voices of other people.
Without question.
And really being finding a sense of flight in their vision for it. And you know, it's such an interesting thing because a lot of times in writing can in a lot of ways be very subjective. And it's like, but so even with some of the people that help me with my writing, I've learned from them to ask this question, is what are we trying to accomplish here?
Yeah.
And that's in a lot of ways, that's really the only way you can gauge whether you succeeded from a craft standpoint or not, is based on, now you can debate whether that's the right thing to try to accomplish, but that's the only way to really gauge it, is if you have reached the point at which you set out to reach.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. See, that's why your craft transcends with mine, you know, it's the creative world. To further your point, you develop and you find a concept.
Yeah.
And then every decision that you make from then on needs to reinforce that concept.
Hmm.
And that's what kind of keeps me on track. Because I get derailed sometimes. I'm the creative, so I'll go in tangents. But, you know, I'll have to bring myself back and be like, mm-hmm. you know, I remember what the concept is. You know, I have images of what.
Yeah,
you know, the inspirational images are always in front of us at the office, and we refer back to them when we have to make a decision design wise, or any other decision. We refer back to what the original idea was, because otherwise, you sometimes can run off the rails, so to speak.
It reminds me of I've been on a Michelangelo kick lately, and he said, "I saw the angel in the marble and carved until I set him free."
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I mean, it blows my mind. But I love the fact that he says, "I saw the angel," and then every step he took subsequent to that was to set that angel free. And so, to your point, it's like everything he's doing is to accomplish the liberation of this angel from the marble in which it was, you know, previously caged. And I think that's such a phenomenal thing. Now another, I feel like I just want to, like, you know, open up the Tommy gun of questions and just, like, kind of fire at you. But one thing I'm fascinated about with your art and your craft, like all crafts, there is such a crucial element of structure. But in yours, it's a lot more cataclysmic if structure is not kept together, whereas in other art forms, it may be, I don't know, maybe it's a little more flexible. But so I don't even know what my question is, but I guess I just want to know, how do you navigate art and creative preferences amidst the restraints of necessary structural integrity in the things that you're making?
Yeah, well, I'm designing a custom home right now in Boston, just so... I'm gonna go laterally a little bit, but I'll get to the point. And the house, first and foremost, has to stand up, and it's got to be waterproof and all those things, and it's got to be safe and stuff. But I wanted, the house is perched on a cliff that's overlooking the ocean in north of Boston, and I wanted the house to appear as if it's floating. Okay, so all the steel members and stuff that we've used to erect this house are very, very minimal, streamlined. Like, I would get into arguments with my structural engineers because they're like, "No, you can't do that. It's not going to be able to support it." Well, think about this and think about it another way, and how we can do this, and how the whole thing is to have the structure sort of become the artwork, and it takes a long time. I'm still learning that process, But the structure is an integral part of every building. And if you look at it as an obstacle, you're never going to have harmony.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use it and manipulate it in ways that is going to work with your end result that you want,
Right, sure.
Not sure if that answers your question.
No, it absolutely does. And I mean, the way I've heard that talked about in other crafts is you have to understand the rules in order to know how to effectively break them. I mean, in the same way, you need to know structural integrity from, you know, level one to level 400
right.
in order to be able to manipulate it in ways that keeps its integrity but doesn't inhibit the art in the process.
Absolutely. That's the challenge between sometimes architects and structural engineers. You know, their job is to make it stand, and our job is to make it look graceful while it stands.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. And if you find a good engineer, they understand that, that the architect's, you know, inspiration is somewhat, or their agenda is somewhat different, but good people tend to find each other and work together, I believe, you know.
Absolutely.
And I've been fortunate in that matter.
What or maybe why? Why does captivating architecture, why does it matter? Like today in the 21st century, why does that matter,
well,
Chris?
But that's a big question. I'll tell you, if I can internalize it, you know, when you think of any city, what's the first thing you think about? When you think about a city, the first thing you think about is the buildings, the cityscape. Right? I mean, it's the first thing that comes to mind. You just think of New York City, you
Me
think
too.
Of skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And I believe that architecture is important because it talks to us about where we are now. Mm-hmm. And where we're going to be, you know, as things change, you know, look at the skyline in New York City now. It's like unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's always changing. It's a sign of growth. Mm-hmm. It's a sign of prosperity. Mm-hmm. It's a sign that desirability, people want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it attracts people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a lot of other factors, but that's to me the core thing that is important in architecture, where you understand where you've been by looking at, you know, an image and a building, because they stand longer than we do, you know, and they're going to be here for a lot longer than we are.
Right.
And it gives an era in time.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, and even when Kristen and I, we were born in the Chicagoland area. And then we moved to Austin, Texas, but then we moved to Charleston. And Charleston, I was so immediately, I mean, I love the way you said it, and so forgive me if I butcher what you said, but the idea of architecture talking to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we moved to Charleston, Charleston has really retained this kind of revolutionary era story in its downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Intentionally, I mean, they want that kind of historic atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I was immediately so drawn to that because I felt like it gave it character, and not just character in kind of a flat way, but it felt like because I understood a little more than maybe like a homogenized environment where it's just brick and plywood, it felt like home more.
Mm.
I mean, in the same way, like I feel more at home around the people I know best.
Yeah,
it felt like the architecture of that city gave me a chance to really know because of the way it looked.
That's great. Yeah, I understand that. That's a very good way to put it. You know, and architecture does that.
Yeah,
and that's what I love about it.
Well, and even
and it's always changing too, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah. Well, and even when we moved to Manhattan just a little over 2 years ago, and I was overwhelmed. I mean, Chris, I get.
Who isn't?
Oh my gosh! Right? I mean, I get.
I've lived here all my life, and I'm overwhelmed. You know, every day.
Oh well, and I not necessarily in a clinical way, but I get a lot of social anxiety. Like I get anxious. Like when you and I are going to sit here, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like. What do I say? You know, and all that stuff. But even on the street,
feelings you meet your brother. Trust me.
But even on the streets of Manhattan, I feel this sense of anxiety. And so for me, it was really critical to go. Where are we going to live? And again, my wonderful wife, who is you know, certainly the rudder of our relationship. Thank goodness. She said, "How about the West Village?" And the West Village, you know, for people that don't know, per my experience, which again is limited. But it feels a little more old New York to me.
Without question.
It doesn't feel like this. I'm being hastened into, you know, a science fiction future. It feels a little more like Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, it's so neighborhoody.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And there's the cobblestone and the lanterns and the brownstones. And you know, I don't know if I'd thought of it in these terms until, you know, hearing you articulate it. But that's kind of how I felt. I felt welcomed amongst that architecture. I felt a little more understood amongst that architecture.
Yep.
I felt a little more sense of kinship amongst that architecture. And we've been there now for 2 years. And even when I walk out of that neighborhood and I'm into a lot more of the really high, monolithic, imposing buildings.
Right.
I feel like I want to go go back home.
Yeah, you want to go back to the neighborhood.
A couple blocks away from my home.
It's crazy. It's different. It's analogous to, you know, being in a forest and being in the woods because you find sanctuary there in this big gestalt that we all, you know, live in here. You find pockets. That's what's great about New York, right? You find pockets where you call home because every neighborhood varies. Five blocks over is another neighborhood.
Yeah,
different with a different vibe, a different feeling, and different people, isn't it? Isn't it amazing?
Absolutely.
So I could see why West Village called to you. I
mean, yeah,
you're totally a West Village.
Well, and I had a. I mean, let me just tell you a random story here, which I do often. But I, you know, I don't know what all like the you know, kind of watershed moments are in becoming a New Yorker, and I have a long way to go. but I feel like I hit one last night. So I'm out walking my dog 9 or 10 o'clock. And we have this little Shiba Inu. He's like 23 pounds, almost like a shrunken husky. And we're walking down like in the Bank Street, West 10th area. Again, cobblestone, brownstone buildings, really quiet for New York anyway. And we pass by this mound of discarded cassette tapes. I mean, it's like this it's like this little dune of cassette tapes. And so I walk up to it, and I'm immediately fascinated. And, you know, for better or worse, it's not uncommon to see trash on the streets here. But to see this little treasure trove of cassette tapes, I was kind of intrigued by that. So I walk up, and it's like Michael McDonald and Bette Midler and Foreigner.
Oh, like the old school cassettes,
right? Yeah, old cassette tapes. And so I'm walking by, and then as I'm kind of departing, I see on the fringe of this pile of cassette tapes a picture in one of the cassette jackets of Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise in a bomber jacket. And I know instantly this is the Top Gun cassette tape.
Yep.
And so I kind of look to my left and I look to my right. And I know I'm about to cross the line. I know I'm about to, in New York, pick up my first piece of trash and take it home, right? And so I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm just going to go with it. So I pick it up and I timidly slip it in my coat. I go home and I'm all excited. I tell my wife, I'm like, oh, man. You'll never believe what I found. She's not as nearly as excited as I am.
Yeah.
And I take it out of the case, and it's not the Top Gun soundtrack. It's Lionel Richie's greatest hits in Chinese.
No, come on. Are you serious?
Yeah, I've got it. Look, it's Lionel Richie.
Oh, that's crazy.
I brought it here. I don't know what this says, something dark about my soul that I'm excited
about. That's so cool.
It's Lionel Richie's greatest hits in Chinese.
Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
And so after I showed my wife, she's like, "You're gonna get rid of that, right?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "This is fantastic."
I just met Lionel Richie's second daughter. I don't remember what her name is. Catch. She was at the opening. Catch. Really cool girl.
Really?
You talked.
No, is this the Catch in L.A.?
In L.A. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Really, really cool girl.
Now, do you have? I mean, you mentioned L.A., and your work isn't just limited to the boundaries of New York City, but as I think about that, how much does the overall kind of atmosphere of a city play into how you approach or conceive what you're going to make to be incorporated into that city?
Yeah, good question. So it has a lot, is the answer, a lot to do with it. So I'm just going to give you an example for Catch LA. I'm an avid gardener. I love – that's why, you know, I have my house in the suburbs that I go to on weekends. Mm. I really enjoy – I don't know what it is about flowers and flora and stuff, but I really enjoy growing, cultivating it, keeping it alive, giving it water, giving it food. Mm. There's just something about that, something that grows out of the earth for me.
Is it
and it's beautiful.
Is it calming?
Yeah, without question, without question. So I've always had that love. And fortunately, I found – someone else who I didn't think had that love, Mark Birnbaum. He's the owner of EMM Group. They own, you know, Catch. And he also had that same, he was inspired by flowers. And it was kind of interesting for me to find that out early on. The project, I think we've been working on it for about 3.5 years. And early on, I found out that Mark was really also into flowers. And he said to me something really simple, and it was profound, and it stuck. He said, "Flowers make people happy." And it's true.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And, you know, if you go to Catch L.A., I wanted the experience to feel like you're in a garden, in a magic garden, you know, a secret garden. Hmm. And we filled as much as we could because the environment there allows plants to proliferate all year long. Hmm. They bloom all year long. Hmm. So I was like, my God, what a great opportunity I have here. I love doing something, you know, which is planting and flowers and the beauty that nature has that I just cannot duplicate, but what I'm going to do as an artist is use what nature gives us and use it in creating my art, you know? Mm-hmm. So Mark and I have the same sort of passion about that, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Two guys, you know?
Absolutely.
Two straight guys.
Yeah.
And we created this garden together that I think is going to have some permanence. It's going to have some longevity. And I was fortunate and able to be in an environment and in a climate that was conducive to creating this garden experience. You know, I always wanted to have a restaurant, you know, dining amongst the flowers kind of thing. And that's what we did at Catch.
And if I remember right, the walkway leading up to that front door, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's like Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
It's unbelievable. I mean,
it was fun.
It's colorful. I mean, even when you look at the photographs, and that's one of your venues I haven't actually gotten to step foot into, but even in the photographs, it's like you feel like the wave of perfume from those flowers. You know?
Without question. Yeah, it's all of it. It's immersive. You know, I wanted it to be immersive. So we have the flowers, but not only that, we have a water feature that starts and emanates through your journey. And the water cascades alongside of you, so you hear the rippling, and we have several fountains.
Yeah.
So I wanted it to be this. As soon as you got off the elevator, wow, I'm just somewhere else.
Mm.
And the sound of the water, the smell of the flowers. You're very right. You haven't been there, but you caught up on. You know, you caught on it.
Yeah.
The smell of the flowers, the sound of the water. Mm. It all has to do, in part, of creating a memory.
Yeah. Well, it seems like even that would, in maybe a small micro way, give people a slice of the serenity and tranquility you find when you're gardening. You know, they're
100%.
Not hearing the traffic on the 101 or the 405, but they're getting the water and the flowers. And
very well said.
Allow people to kind of, I don't know, be at ease in their skin.
Yeah, and that's my greatest thing about what I really love about the profession that I've chosen, or maybe it's chosen me, I don't know, but is inspiring, because at the end of the day, it's tangible, and I can say to someone, this is what I created.
Yeah.
This is what I was working on for 3.5 years, you know? And it's something very personal that becomes very public, and there's nothing better than sharing that with somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the labor you put into it in order for people to enjoy it, I mean, here, we'll go back to the Michelangelo well for a second. I mean, he said, you know, genius is eternal patience.
Yeah.
And the patience it requires for you 3.5 years and, you know, at times maybe longer to provide that for other people is really, really remarkable.
Yeah.
What's the best compliment, Chris, that someone can give you about your work?
Oh, you know what? It's a good question. I'll tell you what the best compliment was recently. I was at Catch, and I'm putting the finishing touches at Catch, and some of the things I actually like to physically do myself. So I designed these light fixtures that have ivy growing all over them. So I wanted the ivy to hang in a certain way. So I got up on a ladder and I did it myself. And they were holding interviews at the time, and they were having an influx of people coming in, you know, looking for employment. And this one girl came in who walked in, and she was, I was on a ladder. I was about, you know, 10 feet, 12 feet away from her. And she gave just an organic response, like, oh, my God, this place is amazing. She had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
I was on a ladder, you
yeah,
know,
right.
fixing, you know.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was the best candid compliment I could ever get. You know, like it at that moment, the 3.5 years, I remember the feeling that I had when I was sketching and drawing what she just experienced, and that for me to come to that, you know, point was really, really inspiring.
Yeah.
And it was really, like, inside I felt amazing. And I didn't say anything to her. You know, she was kind of looking around because there was no one there. It just was me and the people were in the back. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm here for an interview. And I was like, I think you just walk back over there. You know, someone will help you back there. So she walked away, and she had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
Best feeling in the world.
Wow.
And I
love that. I mean, and I relate to that. I mean, because I guess – the language I use when I hear you say that, and where my ears take me with that, is it's like you give people kind of this, maybe it's in a brief moment, maybe it's something bigger, but you kind of awaken somebody. You kind of, it's like that little moment of awe, that little moment. I mean, you know, Kafka, you know, he talks about how a great book should serve as the axe for the frozen sea within us. And it's like, just wake us up.
Yep.
You know, or like, you know, other artists talk about how, you know, great art shakes the dust off our souls. And it's like that, that's what I hear in that moment. It's like she kind of snapped, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It kind of came to, yeah, it all kind of came together for me in that moment, you know. When you're creating something and you're working for 3 years on it, you forget sometimes. You forget the road and the journey that it took you to get there. And you get overwhelmed with business. Yeah. And all the other things that come associated with putting together a 12,000 square foot restaurant, you know? But at that moment,
yeah,
it makes it all incredibly worth it.
Yeah. Right? Well, you kind of hinted at it just there. So I want to talk about that. I mean, you've been in this, you've been honing your craft for more than two decades, but actually practicing your craft professionally for more than two decades. Is there one moment that as you look back now, and you have a lot ahead of you, but as you look back now, is there one moment or one project that you're most proud of?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. You know, and I was I was trying to prepare myself for that. And you know, the honest truth is that they all have a piece of me. I can't honestly tell you there's one project that stands out that's better than the rest or anything like that. I wish I could, but they all have a piece of me. You know, there's all bits and pieces of these projects that I've spent a lot of time putting together. And it's like, I guess, picking a favorite from your child. Like, which one do you
take? Right. That's
exactly
right. That's exactly right. So what keeps you moving forward? I mean, what for you continues your momentum, not only just to keep working, but to keep seeking great work and new work and to do things that you haven't attempted yet? What keeps moving you forward?
That whole, exactly what you said is what keeps me moving forward. It's the exploration. It's the exploring a different part of my craft that I haven't explored with a previous project. Mm-hmm. And I'm always trying to, you know, if you look at my body of work, I've gone through periods, like any artist does, I guess. You know, I've gone through periods of inspirations in that work. But when you look back, there's probably a common theme that ties them all together. Don't ask me what it is. I don't know what it is, but there is something that ties them all together. But yet they're each very different. And it was because I was at a different point in my life, in my career. It was a different client, a different environment. I get inspired. And the moment takes me, you know, I do live in the moment, very, very much that.
Yeah.
And the moment takes me and then it takes me somewhere else, you know.
Right.
So
right.
For me, what keeps me going is exploring and doing things that I haven't done before. That's really inspiring for me. You know, I just don't like copying. If something is successful to me, it doesn't mean I need to copy it over and over again. You know, I just want to do something different. But people will say the underlying theme in a lot of my work lately has been nature. You know, I use a lot of flora in my designs because they make me happy.
Yeah, right. Well, and even that back bar, which is connected to New York City restaurant called Toro, you have the wall of live ivy, which is
wisteria,
which is even more remarkable because it's in this context of Manhattan, and you really do feel like you've kind of stepped into this other dimension.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. So the owners of the restaurant, we went to Barcelona together, and we were just taken back by Barcelona. Barcelona is an amazing city. So we spent about a week in Barcelona together, just kind of taking it all in. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I remember about Barcelona is walking through the streets and having that, you know how you walk through the West Village, you have that neighborhoody feel. The buildings are intimate, they're smaller.
Yep.
There's people, you know, there's people living there, there's people eating there, there's people doing everything there. I loved that part of Barcelona. So so Back Bar was inspired by walking through the streets of Barcelona. And that's kind of where the inspiration just kind of took off from there. And we have on the either side of the wall, I wanted the walls to feel like they were parts of buildings.
Yeah.
And they extend, they're implied to extend beyond the ceiling. Mm. And then the wisteria on the ceiling kind of covers it all. And you feel like you're in a little part of a microcosm of a city.
Absolutely.
You know? And I was fortunate because I had, you know, Doug and Will, who were very on board with exactly what we were doing. I, you know, again, I go back to that. I'm fortunate because I work with great people who become my great friends. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing better, I think, for me.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing better.
Is that, so I'm going to come back to a question I asked before, because I sense this. Is that what you're most proud of in your multiple decades? Is it the relationships and the friendships?
Yeah, I what I'm most proud of is sharing mutual inspirations and carving them out for people, you know, and becoming lifelong friends.
Yeah.
From it.
Yeah.
I remember Doug Jacob, who was one of the owners of Toro. We were sitting, I don't remember where it was, but we were sitting outside on a table somewhere, and I just looked at my friends, and I was like, you know, I just want to tell you guys, like, this is the best feeling in the world. We met through business. Here we are. We've created our craft. We've done our projects together. And here we are. We're still amazing friends because of it.
Yeah.
It's just let's cheers to that for a second.
Yeah.
Let's just take a second and cheers to that.
I love that.
Because if it wasn't for our passion in what we do in work, we wouldn't have had these personal relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, yes, you know, to answer your question.
What a remarkable thing, because I think, you know, my experience is that any endeavor, but in a unique way, I think a creative or artistic endeavors can be really isolating, really lonely, because it requires so much that we go internal.
Without question.
In order to you know, yeah, create outward. And so,
very
so
well put.
To be able to kind of take that on and go on that kind of, you know, voyage and come out on the other side with people that you're standing there with, it's almost like you start alone.
Yeah.
And then you're standing there with a little tribe on the other side. That's remarkable.
And here's what we've done.
Yeah.
Here's what we completed, which is a great feeling. It's a great feeling.
What do you think your dad would say to you if he was still around, Chris?
So, you know, funny you say that, because I was in Catch and I was having dinner there, and it was a great night. I mean, there was a lot of amazing people that came together. It was one of the first weekends that we opened, and my girlfriend asked me at the time if you had anybody. We were in the middle of celebrities, one celebrity after another, and I remember the owner of Restoration Hardware was there, who was very inspiring to me, and he came over and said to me that the space is amazing. You know, he really loved the space, and walked away, and I felt amazing. And here we are in the middle of this amazing room with all these celebrities in there, and people are coming over and congratulating me. And Tina turns to me and says, if you had anybody that you'd want to be here, who would it be? And I was like, immediately knee-jerk reaction was my dad. Because my dad was a creator also. But he grew up in a different world than I did. He grew up in Greece, and they didn't have the opportunities that I have. So I feel so amazingly fortunate to be given an opportunity to live in this amazing country that you can follow your dreams and do whatever it is that you want to do. Yeah. My dad wasn't given that opportunity. They emigrated here when he was in his 30s, and he lacked the education, but did the best he could. Did a hard day's work at the end of the day. Was a builder, and he really inspired me to become who I am. And I would love for my dad to, you know, see what he's inspired me to do for my life, basically.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Sounds like, you know, he'd be proud of you.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear it from myself, but sometimes, you know, in the back of my head, I know he'd be proud of me.
Yeah,
you know, but it's never done. I mean,
we're
always moving. We're always working. I mean, you can't stand and reflect too long on your past, because you'll never move forward. You know, you asked the question before. It's moving through new, uncharted ground. Yeah. That's what inspires me.
Yeah, right.
That's what I love.
Chris, I struggle with that, man. I so often I am looking back, and sometimes that feeds my moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, I learn from it, or maybe I take some difficult moments, and they propel me. But I do find myself more often than I would like, kind of being caught in the net of the past, rather than just kind of proceeding into what's ahead and doing new things. And I mean, so it's
daunting
for me to hear you say that.
It's daunting, and it's scary, and it's never easy.
Yeah,
you know. But you know, I like to work out. You look like you work out, obviously. Also, I like to work out, and you get to a point sometimes when you work out and you're doing cardiovascular and it's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. that's the only point that you make gains.
Yeah,
it's
right.
when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You don't make any gains when it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to kind of move through that easy point
yeah, right.
and get into that difficult zone
mm-hmm.
in order to make progress.
Yeah, and not only progress in our craft, but progress in our character.
Yeah.
Progress just as human beings,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That's how we grow.
Without question.
And that's so evident. Over all your work, Chris. New World Design Builders. I would encourage everybody, please, 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 go to the website, newworlddesignbuilders.com, and just look at I don't know, Chris's craft there as a gift for us. Thank you so much, Chris,
for
being on the Merrill. Please come back sometime.
Yeah,
you,
well,
you really
thank
are
you.
Inspiring. Thanks
thank
so much, Chris.
Josh, thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to the Merrill. To find me on social media for upcoming live appearances or to buy a book, you can visit joshreebach.com. But please join me again next week.